The hog would be cut into shoulders, ham, and bacon, mainly. And the day needed to be, the weather needed to be cold enough so that the hams and bacons and so forth could be spread in a clean place so it would cool enough to get all the animal heat out. And usually the meat was left out overnight to be sure that it would get cold enough. And then the meat had to be salted down or cured. And every household had a meat box. And this would be about three by four feet. And a layer of salt would be put on the bottom. And then the pieces of meat would be added in layers with salt in between until the meat was completely covered by salt. And the length of time the meat stayed in the box was judged by the size of the hams and shoulders and by how cold or warm the weather might be at that time. And after the homeowner had decided that the meat had been in long enough, one piece of meat would be pulled from the box and sliced and fried to see if it had the right amount of salt or seasoning in it. And if the meat was ready, was cured, then it was taken out of the box and the salt was washed off and the meat was wiped dry. And the place where the meat was kept was called a smokehouse. And when you took the meat out and got it washed, you hung it from the rafters in the meat house. And then you would, smokehouses had dirt floors, and a small fire would be made under the meat, and hickory chips would be used to keep the smoke going so that the smoke would drift upward and give the meat the hickory flavor. And the meat would be smoked for several days or until the farmer felt like that there was enough flavor to the meat. And then it could either be left hanging in the meat house, or it could be put into bags and tied up. But people kept their smokehouses locked because a person who was good at curing hams didn't want to leave the door unlocked so that someone might come in and take a ham of meat for his own use.
What about animals? Did animals ever get in there?
No, they were hung so high.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, above your head.
What did y'all make for recreation?
Recreation was not a word in my vocabulary. If it had been, I would have said recreation was getting far enough away from my parents so that I could not be told what to do next. But play was a problem with. Play was a thing that we had no problem with. If we didn't have anything to do, we could always find something that we wanted to do on our own. We liked nothing better for our mother to tell us, well, you may go play with your friends this afternoon, but be sure and be home by 3:30 because we have work to do then. And we would go to our friend's house and get their parents to be sure and tell us when 3:30 came, because if we didn't get home when we were supposed to, it would be a long time before we'd get to go play with anyone else. Most of the time, until we were 8 or 9 years old, we spent making playhouses. And this meant sweeping out a clean spot in the yard, lining up rocks, balloons, and finding bits of dishes for plates to go on our tables, finding an apple or a peach, cutting it up to be our food, And we always had a mom and daddy and several children, and we played house. When we were tired of playing that, we'd play hide and seek, hopscotch, swinging the swings, or dodgeball, jackstones. But we did not have any problem entertaining ourselves when we were not having to work. Many of the houses had trees made from a car tire suspended from a tree. And while there might be swings on porches, where we spent a lot of time swinging in the shade and just talking. And on Sunday afternoons or any afternoon when we were not busy, we might go walking in the woods or go to a friend's house or walk to a store for a pack of chewing gum. Sometimes the store might be a mile and a half or 2 miles away. As teenagers, we would have Winnie Rose or candy drawings. At a candy drawing, there would be a jar with sticks of candy in it, and they'd have pieces of paper on the table that might be numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and they would arrange chairs around the room, and your friends would be there, maybe your boyfriend, and everybody would be laughing and talking. But when it came time for the drawing to begin, someone, usually your boyfriend or some other boy, would ask you to go draw with him. And you would go up and pick up a piece of paper, and whatever number was on the paper, that was how many sticks of candy you would get. And very few papers had 5 sticks, because if you drew 5 sticks every time, the candy would be gone shortly and the candy drawing would be over. So a lot of the numbers only said 1 or 2 sticks. And your boyfriend might let you have all the candy, or the couples might divide among them. If you were very popular, you might have a lot of candy when you got there to go home, which you could give to your brothers and sisters. Rainy days we used for unaccustomed mouths, or reading, or mending clothes, or for extra cooking. If you wanted to visit anybody, you didn't worry about how to get there, because you could walk. Sometimes there were families who needed to go to the city that was 12 miles away, and if there was no transportation, they just got up early and walked during the cool part of the day, spent the hot part of the day in town, and then walked back home in the afternoon when it was cool again.
What role did the church play in?
The church had an important role in a community, and there was hardly any community that did not have at least one church. A lot of the social activities were connected with the church. During the hard years of the 30s and 40s, most churches could not afford a pastor to live in the community and preach every Sunday. Many of them, the pastor only preached one Sunday a month, or maybe 2 Sundays a month. On the other Sundays, they might have Sunday school. In the months of May and June, most churches would have a decoration day or a homecoming day. And preceding this particular Sunday, the church would be clean, the yards would be clean, and then one day would be selected to clean the cemetery and get the graves back in order. And everybody would invite their friends, their relatives, or people who used to live at the church to come back on that day, and they would honor the people who had been buried in the cemetery. The Saturday before, people would go into the yards and gather the flowers that they had blooming, and would make them into small bouquets and put them in tubs of water. And then on Sunday, either before the morning service or right after the morning service, the people would gather out in the cemetery and would put these flowers on every grave because we did not have many homemade flowers back at that time. And after the Sunday morning services, there would be dinner on the ground, and for some churches it really was on the ground until people learned that if they fixed tables and put the food there, it would be safe from the bugs, the ants, and small children. But in this community, homecoming was really a big day because before World War II, much of the land in the valley was bought as training ground for Fort McClellan. And so a lot of people sold their homes and moved away. And so when we had homecoming, they all wanted to come back and visit with the people and remember their loved ones because this place still continued to feel like home to them.
What was it like with that, having the sharecroppers on the farm?
My father owned an 80-acre farm, and since he only had one son, this was too much land for him, for the two of them to farm. So the land was divided in half, and there was already another house on the land besides the house where we live. So half of the land was meaned out, which meant 40 acres was given to someone else. But the people that lived there, even though they were sharecroppers, they were never called sharecroppers, they were called renters. And the land was rented on shares. The renter could grow cotton, corn, whatever, but the landowner received a share, and at the time that I was growing up, it was called growing on thirds and fourths. One third referred to the amount of cotton, one fourth to the amount of corn, or vice versa, depending on whatever decision was made between the landowner and the renter. And the thirds and the fourths meant that when the cotton or corn or the crops were laid together, that portion would be given to the landowner and the rest the renter kept for himself. The family that I remember that rented from us for the longest consisted of 8 members, the parents plus 3 boys and 3 girls. And when they started renting, all the children were grown except one, which meant that they had almost 7 adults on that one farm. And they were good farmers and hard workers. But they were never able to raise enough crops to carry them from one year until the next. And although their mules, their equipment, their fertilizer, seeds, everything that pertained to farming was provided by the landowner, they never seemed to make ends meet. It seemed to me that I could only remember them raising 2 hogs or having more than 2 or 3 cows, even though there were 8 adult members in the family. This meant that they never had enough food or money to last till the next fall when the crops would come in again. So they were continually borrowing money from the landowner to carry them over into the next year. And many times they didn't look after the equipment as they should. Mules, when they pulled the plows, had to be checked carefully for rubbed places on their shoulders, and often a renter wouldn't check, and sometimes the mules would get in such bad shape that it would be hard for them to pull the plow because they weren't looked after as they were supposed to. They didn't have to feed the mules. They didn't. Their only job was to come up and get the equipment and the mules and do whatever work was necessary for them to make their crop. Many, the landowner had to furnish them a house to live in, all the seeds, fertilizer, and farming equipment that was necessary. And yet, many of the renters just moved around from one farm to another and were never able to accumulate enough money to buy land.